Good morning.
Morning.
There was a famous 6th century lay Buddhist named Fu Dashi. He wrote this poem called, or verses on the Mind King. And I'm just going to read a couple of lines because I think it's pertinent. So the poem, having referred to the Mind King, who, for all his importance, is not evident to the senses. So it goes on to say, the salt put in water, the glue put in paint, certainly these are present, but we cannot see their form. The Mind King is also thus, abiding within the body, going in and out of the gate of the face, in response to things according to their feelings, freely and without hindrance, all his undertakings are accomplished. So what is this Mind King? Playing is good, right? Because it takes away this seriousness that sometimes we cling to, thinking we know what's right and what's wrong. Play kind of stretches our sclerosed ideas of things. The artist knows about glue, and the cook who's going to cook the pasta or the rice knows about the salt. There's really not much else to say, because I've already said it all, and I'm really tired of it. But I'm happy to talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. So if there's any questions or comments or whatever, lay it on me.
So what came to mind for me is the idea of surrender, that I am more perceptive to the concept that you're referring to, as I understand what you were referring to, as when I'm not trying to control or intellectualize or in some other way identify, for lack of a better term, that part of my existence or reality that is intuitive. If I can just accept what I'm perceiving on that level of not being able to or being able to recognize that there is something that I can't label or define in the way that I label or define or identify most other things, then I'm open to that perception, which it greatly aids my ability to live comfortably in my own skin by accepting the fact that I am not the, end-all, be-all, arbiter, or, I'm not in control of everything that's going on around me, and I can't control anybody or anything. So it's kind of like the idea of wearing the world like a loose garment. And if I can be more, I guess it's relaxed, but on the other hand, attentive and, awake, then I'm open to all of these mind keys or the what's happening around me that is not necessarily something that I can identify as anything other than my being able to connect with everybody and everything, rather than pigeonhole everything into my, how I can describe it or label it at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Ross. So when I first heard that line from that poem, of course, it's referring to the senses, but he also means the skandhas. He also means the relationship between feeling, hearing, seeing, and the physical body and the experience and how we identify with it. And so in a way, it's talking about non-attachment, of course. And also, it's saying that there's something here, like salt in the water and like glue in the painting, that is not evident by using the senses.
I thought that from what I got from that was like the salt in the water flavors the food, the noodles or whatever. It has an effect on the food.
Correct.
Whereas the same thing is the mind. The mind has the effect on the being, the person, but it isn't the person or the being. Mm-hmm. That's what I initially got from it. Mm-hmm. The mind can make you a happy being, a happy person, a sad person, mm-hmm. but it's really, it's because there's nowhere, it doesn't really exist anywhere. Mm.
Yeah.
I read that poem as more a way to take heed, like it was like take heed.
Uh-huh.
It was like a warning. Like,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it was the mind king. The mind rule. The mind is ruling.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Everybody's take on it is based on where they are. So this is kind of like a koan practice. So each person reveals themselves in how they perceive it, because it's their mind.
You said before that you didn't have much to talk about because you're tired of everything.
Yeah.
When you're getting ready to come here and you're like, oh, what am I going to talk about today? And you grab a book, or maybe you have a bunch of notes in which you, or bullet points.
None of that.
Really?
None of that.
Really? Do you ever catch yourself maybe if you're in a state of just general, a little bit more frustrated, do you ever catch yourself almost like it affecting the way you're delivering kind of like a daily's lesson? Do you ever catch yourself and be going like, oh, there you are?
Yeah, so I do sometimes, but most of the time when I walk into the Zendo, this space, I try to drop it outside. Mm-hmm. I'll pick it back up when I get out. But for now, I try to be empty of all of that. And believe me, I carry a backpack like all of us. And I have plenty of things that I deal with. But I try not to let that interfere with the Dharma. Uh-huh. Because that is the mind king. Uh-huh. So my interpretation is looking at it from that perspective.
Gotcha.
Rather than the mind that you and I were just talking about, which right. is also correct. Uh-huh. So your understanding is not wrong. It uh-huh. is correct. There's also another understanding
right.
of mind king, meaning you've already dropped it. Uh-huh. What's left? Buddha okay. nature.
Right.
Buddha nature is mind king.
Right.
That's right. Another way of looking at it. But it includes what you said. Mm-hmm. So both understandings are correct, you see.
This stuff is a loose.
That's why it's like the salt in the water.
I've been finding that I have all these judgments and opinions, and I'm finding out how wrong I am. Seriously, it's been kind of funny. I had so many strong feelings about certain things this week, and I turned out to be total opposite.
I've been telling that for 45 years.
She's been telling you that for 45 years, too.
I know.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, it's becoming
That's clearer. Wonderful. That's humility. I think it's beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, we should all do that, right? Recognize our judgments and how wrong we are.
Yeah,
yeah, that's great. And it's not easy.
No.
Because we like being right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find that when I come across a personality of a person who has clear authority on something, where they speak with not necessarily knowledge of a certain subject, or a person who speaks with kind of a clear definition of what they believe, what they know, how they see the world, I go through two things where on one hand, I go, man, I wish I was a little bit more confident in that. You know, I think I need more confidence, right? And then on the other hand, and I go like, what, who, how do you know? How do you have such confidence in this? Hasn't the world proven itself to be completely not what you thought it was? So on two hands, like, I kind of admire people who have such confidence in the way that they approach the world. And I also think they're kind of foolish.
Yes.
And I struggle with the back and forth of that.
Yeah. So I think both, again, both things are going on. Mm. People are foolish. Mm. And it's also possible to be really diligent and have faith in Bodhidharma, for example, in Buddha nature. So when you look at the perfections, for example, you know, the generosity, patience, moral conduct, diligence, meditation, and wisdom, that creates a kind of self-confidence. Mm. Mm. Self with a capital S as opposed to the small s. Mm-hmm. So again, that's what we're talking about. You were bringing up a really excellent point about the mind, mm-hmm. from the small s point of view.
Gotcha.
And I was just suggesting that from the capital S position, there's another view, which is confidence, you see, because it is a knowing. It is a wisdom. Mm-hmm. It's coming from wisdom. But how do you know the difference? You know, yeah. how to know the difference. That comes back to what Alice is saying about judgment. So when you fall, which we all do, and, you know, scrape your knee or whatever, because you're judging or you're just making a mistake. You're not seeing things clearly because of your own projections, how things are. So it always comes back to trying to be clear, empty. Clear like space. So from the point of view of emptiness, from a mind that is just a mirror reflecting what's there, there's nothing there to be wrong about. Mm. It's just what is.
It's funny to take this kind of, this approach, this philosophical approach. And I think to an outsider, you could take a Buddhist scholar, a Buddhist monk, somebody who's pretty strong and well versed in this, and to an outsider, they would look like an idiot.
True.
This person has no confidence in themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I think the two things are consistent, though, at least for me, because I can feel confident in my views or in my opinion or my perceptions, but at the same time, I know that I could easily and am frequently be wrong. Mm. I have to accept the fact that, you know, everything that no matter how strong my belief is or confidence is, I have to recognize the fact that many times I'm mistaken. And I have to be able to accept that about myself, but, and at the same time, not lose confidence in what steps or what actions I want to take.
Yes.
Yeah, be open enough to adjust on the fly, so to speak.
Yes.
I'm going the wrong way here. I have to change course. Not be attached to it because of a matter of ego that I have to be right.
Yes. So this is also really good because now we're talking about no self and self. Which is it?
Both.
Well, you know, it's like somebody has can go off on an opinion about something and they can go on a tear for 5 minutes and then go, and then at the end they can go, hey, but what do I know? I could be wrong. It kind of, you know what I'm saying? It's almost like you're giving yourself like a safe distance from your own opinions. Is that, that's sometimes I kind of feel like that's
what okay.
This is.
All right. So self-doubt that comes from feeling less than, feeling not up to the task of your life, feeling like you're worthless. You know, now we're looking at things that are part of the dis-ease because that's an attachment. Confidence that comes from no self, no ego, no self making one feel better about oneself by being an expert. There's no, I'm comparing yourself to some other because there's no other. So it doesn't apply. When you're a bodhisattva, you have no self. So there's nothing there. There's no Michael getting in the way. Good luck with that. That's kind of our struggle, you know? So,
big struggle.
Yeah. I mean, humility is wonderful. And you have to be really careful about being overconfident because it's related to our ego and it's related to our sense of lack. So when we, you know, if you look around, why does the guy drive? I mean, hopefully none of you are driving a red convertible right now, but if you are, the stereotype is you're driving that to make overcompensate for something, right? So our whole culture, everything puts it on us that first of all, you're not good enough. You're not healthy enough. You don't have what you need. And you've got to do this in order to get it. So everything is working against you, you see. Everything is working against you being really confident in your own nature and being able to do what needs to be done from how can I help? Because if you look around, everything is telling you, you can't. You're no good. You know, unless you have the $1 million, unless you have the great house on the hill, unless you have the wonderful wife, unless, you know, blah, 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 and it goes. And it wears you down. And you come into the whole experience with this whole idea of self already that you grew into as your experience on this planet. So all of that is like what Michael was saying earlier. It's not real. It's the mind that isn't real, but we buy it, we believe it, and we become what we believe.
So the self measurement or the self focus is a rabbit hole.
Yeah,
to go down because I'm much better off, or I feel a lot better about myself when I'm focused on the task, on the action that I'm taking, which is hopefully being of help to somebody or some situation, and rather than focusing on how am I doing, you know, am I being strong enough here, or am I, you know, succeeding in how I'm handling this task, that is fraught with pitfalls for me.
But I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Focus on the task, on the action, not focus on myself.
Yeah. And so the other thing, of course, about ego or idea of self is it's separate. And you're not alone. So that's one of the wonderful things about our practice that you discover is this connectedness. There's no such thing as being alone and separate. That's just an idea that you carry. We're all connected. We're all in it together. There's this great love, if you will. Unconditional. Holding it all together. Here we are. And that's the glue and that's the salt. That's the part that your senses and your idea of self can't grasp. When you're feeling separate and feeling there's another that's judging you, I get it. It's really difficult. That happens to me all the time. I happen to be going through a lot right now around all of that. And it's a struggle. So I understand. But it's not it, okay? So we have our practice. We have our Sangha. We have other people that share with us by being what you say, Ross. By being, how can I help? So as we each do that, how can I help? Our focus isn't so much on our own shit. Our focus is on, how can I help? It's a bigger experience. It's generosity. It's putting it out there. It's letting go of what we're clinging to so that we can see what else there is to see.
I could oversimplify it by saying it's fear, which is self-centered fear I'm talking about, versus love, which is what can I do for somebody else without expecting anything in return, without a price tag on it.
Yeah.
And so they're polar opposites. When I'm in the fear, I'm of very little use to anyone, including myself. But if I'm trying to be helpful and I'm trying to do something just because it's the right thing to do, and I'm, you know, I'm trying to add something by giving of myself, then I'm on the right track, and I don't get all bogged down in the, you know, in the self-doubt or self-criticism and all that negativity.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's interesting what Mike had to say about interacting with someone else where somebody has a spirit, maybe an extrovert has a huge opinion, and then you reacted to it. Is that correct, Michael?
Yeah, I marvel at it sometimes because I used to be that way and I've changed. I have much less confidence now than I used to when I was younger.
Much what?
I have much less confidence now, as in that kind of confidence, that I guess overconfidence, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I see somebody who's overly confident, I kind of marvel at that. Like, really? Still?
Yeah.
Have
so,
you seen?
Yeah. So that's why teenagers are so obnoxious, right?
Yeah. Yes.
They haven't grown into themselves yet.
I've got a couple of years on you. When I'm with people that are like that, I have a choice. I can either listen and not want to prevail,
Right.
Which is an ego part of us. I don't want to prevail. Or I think they're just being obnoxious or they're arrogant. Uh-huh. And I slough it off.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
If you absorb it, what they're doing, then it impacts you.
So. Yes.
I'm reminded of Bob Dylan's song, the line, "I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now."
So much older than I'm younger than that now. My daughter heard that. She's like, "That doesn't make any sense." It's just like, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Get back to me when it makes sense. Stay in your room until then. Well, it's good to see everyone. Thank you for really picking me up today. I have to admit something. I was really not looking forward to coming today on one level. I was like, oh, I'm just struggling so much. Why do I really want to do this? And I mean, it's like, it's not working. Look at this. You know, it's just like, it's not working. And now I'm totally wrong. Well, I'm in the midst of it working, and it's
don't worry,
great.
You can pick it up on the way outside.
I'll pick it up on the way out. I'll feel miserable on the way home. It was funny. I was at a little concert at in the park, Cafe at the Park, a few weeks ago, and there was a local band there, and the youngest member of the band was like an encyclopedia. He knew everything about every song. Who wrote it, who sang it, when it was sung, the dates, all of it. And he just spouted it off one after another. A mind like that amazes me because I don't have that. You know, I don't remember details like that. It's just not part of what I care about. But this guy was amazing. So I said, who needs Google? We've got you.
Well, regarding that, interesting. We have an acquaintance. Like for 30 years, who has that? He knows everything. Anything and everything, he corrects me. He says there's only two families of blackbirds. He points to an airplane in the sky and says that's a DC-4286. And when I go to fact check him, he's wrong about everything.
Oh, that's fine.
He just lies about everything. And it took me 20 years to realize he's a liar. Everything.
I get accused of that too.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My wife says, you just made that up.
Is it true?
Caught me again. Yeah, I usually make it all up.
No.
I said, I'm not a liar. I just don't know what I'm talking about.
Even Babe Ruth's home run record, I looked it up. He was wrong.
Yeah. Good. All right. Shall we get on with our day? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.